Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, romance. Later on, Dr. Christian from 1947. But first, an episode of The Silver Theater with the story Love is Our Destiny, a CBS broadcast from the 30th of April, 1939.
International Silver Company presents The Silver Theater. Starring Constance Bennett and Melvin Douglas in Love is Our Destiny, directed by Conrad Nick. Brought to you on behalf of two of the greatest names in silverware. International Sterling, world-famous solid silver, and 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Conrad Nagel greeting you from the stage of the Silver Theater in Hollywood and bringing you the 31st in our new series of dramatic productions. Next week, our star will be Joan Crawford. And the other brilliant personalities who will be heard during the remainder of the present series are Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., and Helen Hayes. But now for today's play. The house lights dim and the silver curtain rises on the opening act of Paul Franklin's romantic drama, Love is Our Destiny, which has been adapted for Silver Theater by True Boardman. Our stars are Melvin Douglas and Constance Bennett, who play the roles of Madeline Conlon and Mark Standish. The scene, the main reception hall of the palatial Sutton home on the outskirts of a great city. A young woman, tall, attractive, but with a relentless fury in her eyes, stands just inside the door as three figures confront her, barring her way.
All of you together won't stop me from seeing him. I know he's here. I saw him come in.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Sutton. I tried to stop this young woman, but she
I know, Edward. Whether my husband is here or not is beside the point, Miss Conlon.
Sutton is my name, same as yours. Whether you and Ellen choose to accept that fact or not,
you've certainly given us no reason to accept it. Father.
Margaret, my dear, what's... Oh, Miss Conlon, I might have expected this.
Yes, I should think you might.
But I'm glad you're here. We may just as well talk the matter out once and for all. Will you step into the library?
Ellen, she's very...
I know what I'm doing, my dear. Miss Conlon?
Mother, what do you suppose...
The child, Ellen. Your father began proceedings to have the child taken from her and placed in our custody.
The child? Oh, but is that fair? After all, whatever we may think of Peter's having married a model...
Ellen, simply because your brother was tricked into marrying a girl like Madeline Conlon is no reason for allowing his child to remain under her influence. Oh, if Peter had lived, it might have been... No.
No! Oh, Ellen!
He's dead. This gun went off. He's dead.
And you killed him.
I killed... No. No, I didn't. Let me go.
Stop her. Edward, she's going to get away. Stop her. Call her.
Talk about a break, Mark. A beautiful front-page case like this just 3 months before election.
Well, that'll be all you need, Chief.
All I need. Now, wait a minute, Mark. Let's not kid ourselves. The boy's gone. Boat's gone, too, for Lou Tracy as district attorney. I could send 20 Madeline Collins to the chair and still not lick that reform group. But look, suppose somebody else were to prosecute Madeline Conlon and convict her. One of my deputies, for instance, who already has a record of 34 convictions in a row.
You mean me?
Right. Mark, that's why I sent for you. You're going to prosecute Madeline Conlon.
Swell.
And, Mark, if you get a conviction, the organization backs you for district attorney. How about it?
Oh, boy, how about it? Where's that file?
Here. Maybe you better look it over before you talk to the girl. Boys have already dug up some pretty interesting dope. Little matters that she might not want brought out in an open court. Especially since she has a kid. Hell, look out, you'll drop something out.
No, it's just a picture. Hey. Maddie. Good Lord, I know this girl.
You know her?
Well, I used to. We lived in the same street when I was in high school. She probably wouldn't even remember me.
You sure of that? Maybe I'd better turn it over to somebody else.
And why? Because I knew her 10 years ago? What difference does that make? She's guilty, isn't she? Well, I happen to believe that guilty people should be convicted, whoever they are. This time will be no exception.
This is her cell, Mr. Standish.
All right, Maitland.
Conlon, this is Mr. Standish. Well, speak up. Oh, it's no use, sir. She's been like this ever since she came in.
It's all right. Suppose you wait outside.
Okay, I'll be right.
Miss Conlon, you know who I am.
Yes. You're the deputy district attorney.
Won't you sit down? Now, suppose you tell me exactly what happened that afternoon in Alan Sutton's library.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? It would make it so easy for you, wouldn't it? You see, I've heard all about you, Mr. Standish. 34 convictions in a row. That's a wonderful record, Mr. Standish. A wonderful record.
My record has nothing to do with this. All I want is the truth.
And you'll hear the truth. In court, not before.
You mean you're going to plead not guilty?
Yes.
You sure that's wise, Miss Conlon? I'm sorry you feel this way. There are certain facts of this case that I'd rather have kept out of the court records. And the newspapers.
What are you talking about?
Checks, mostly. Checks that were paid to Madeline Conlon within the last 3 years. Paid by two different men who had no apparent reason to give large sums to an attractive young widow.
Lying. You have no way of knowing about...
Haven't I?
Well, even if it is true, it has nothing to do with this case.
The prosecution's job is to show the character of the defendant.
Oh, but you don't understand. This trial, the death of Alan Sutton is one thing. What you're talking about is quite apart from that. Please, please believe me, Mark.
Mark. So you did remember.
Didn't you?
84th Street. A girl who lived in the flat on the corner. And a fellow who worked in the grocery store down the block. That's a couple of yesterdays ago, Manny. Oh, incidentally, I was already assigned to this case before I realized.
It's funny.
Madeline, listen to me. You're going to plead guilty.
Am I?
I won't lie to you, Madeline. I can't get you off. I wouldn't if I could. But I can promise you silence about this other matter, about the checks.
If I plead guilty.
That's it.
Of course, there's no doubt in your mind that I am guilty.
I wish there were.
Okay. Whatever I say, you're going to see that I'm convicted anyway. I'll plead guilty.
Good. I'll need a deposition. You'll be brought down to my office tomorrow afternoon. Understand?
Yes, I understand.
Madeline, I'm trying to help you. Will you believe that?
Yes. If you'll let me see my boy.
Your boy? Of course you can see him. I'll have the boy brought down here this afternoon.
Oh, no, not here. I wouldn't have Tommy see me here. Outside, Mark, tomorrow. On the way back from your office, please.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Maddie. The regulations...
You want a conviction, don't you?
All right. I'll arrange it. Tomorrow afternoon. One thing I don't understand, Madeline. In the confession you just dictated back there, you said that you went to the Sutton house with a gun, determined to force Sutton to give you money to support the child. And in the argument, you shot him. Well, what happened to the gun?
I threw it away in the river.
In the river? Where?
I don't remember.
You've got to remember. You've got to think, Madeline.
Oh, will you quit it? I made a confession. Now let it go at that. I said I'm guilty as I agreed I would. What more do you want?
Is it Park you said, Mr. Standish?
Huh? Oh, yeah, thanks.
Want me to wait, sir?
Yeah, stay here.
Right.
It's this way, Madeline.
Where?
The summer house, just ahead.
Mark, you won't... I mean, in front of him.
No, no, of course not. I'll wait here. Tell the nurse she should join me.
Thank you.
Go on.
Mommy. Oh, Mommy, Mommy.
My darling.
Oh, Mommy, I thought you wasn't coming.
I'm here, darling. Really and truly here. Nurse, Mr. Standish says you're to wait with him down there by the fountain.
Oh, Mommy. There was an old man with an organ and a monkey here a little while ago. Did you see the monkey?
No, darling. Now I want you to tell Mommy all about yourself. Are you all right? Are you being a good boy? Do you like where you're staying?
Uh-huh. I like it all right. Except I don't see you. You just have to be away, Mommy.
Yes, sweet. Mommy does just have to.
You mean it's a job, kinda?
Mm-hmm. A job, kinda.
Well, it's okay, I guess. But don't take too long. You see... Hello, mister.
Hello, Sonny.
Ma.
Do you know my mommy?
Yes, I do.
Who are you? Mummy, is he my daddy?
No, 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 darling. This is Mr. Standish. He's an old friend of Mummy's.
Oh, does he work where you work when you have to go away from me, like now?
Yes, darling. Something like that.
Mr. Standish, the child is due back at 4. Perhaps I'd better...
Yes, I know. Madeline.
All right, all right. Goodbye, darling. How about a big hug for Mummy?
Bye, Mummy.
Bye.
You want a hug too, mister?
Why, sure, Sonny.
Bye, mister.
Goodbye, Sonny.
Come along, Tommy.
Bye-bye, Mummy. Bye, mister.
All right, Madeline.
I know. We have to go.
Manny, he's a sweet kid.
Yes.
Manny, you're not crying.
No.
Might help.
No.
I could wait in the care.
Oh, will you quit it? You think you're making it any easier? Come on. I'm ready to go.
Madeline.
Well? Well, we can't just sit here staring at one another. Say something.
All right, I will. I didn't sleep much last night. I did some remembering. 11 years ago, 84th Street. I got licked in a fight by a kid who said something I didn't like about the girl who lived in the corner flat.
And so that was why. Against one?
Yeah, I remembered other things too, Manny. A Sunday excursion boat. A couple of kids on the deck. In the moonlight. That was pretty big talk, as I recall. They were both going to get $1 million. He was going to get his managing a railroad.
No, it was a gold mine. He was going to stumble on one in Africa.
Yeah, that's right. And the girl was going to get hers even easier. She was going to marry her million.
And she did. Only, didn't work out quite as she planned. The boy she married was disinherited by his parents. So he left her. But he didn't get far, because an auto crash stopped him on his way. So the dear girl didn't get $1 million. Instead, she got a child whose father was already dead when he was born. That sort of rounds out the remembering, Mom.
I'm sorry, Madeline. Believe me, I'm sorry.
Why? Is it your fault that I married Peter Sutton? Come on, let's go.
Look at me.
Well...
Did you kill Alan Sutton?
No.
Then why did you go there in the first place?
He was going to take Tommy away from me. He started the suit.
What of it? No court would ever...
No. I'm afraid they would, Ma. You see... Well... Alan Sutton had the same evidence you found. They all believed I was no fit mother.
Yeah. But the gun, Mandy. What happened with that?
I came in and begged him... promised him anything. If he'd only let me keep Tommy in. All he did was laugh at me.
And?
He just kept laughing and laughing. He wouldn't listen. I was frantic. I slapped his grinning face.
Did he strike you?
No. Pushed me away. Nope, his desk. Next thing I knew, he had a gun in his hand.
He had a gun?
Yes. He pointed it at me. He would have killed me, Mark. Oh, you do believe me, don't you?
I'm trying to, Madeline. I'm trying to, but... How did you get the gun away from him?
I didn't. I grabbed him, and then the gun went off, and... Well, that's all, Mark. Sutton was dead.
I see. But there's one thing I still can't get through my head, Maddie. Why did you take those checks?
For Tommy. He was desperately sick 2 years ago. Hospitals want money, and they don't ask where it comes from.
But the Suttons, they would have given it to you.
Oh, yes, gladly. They would have loved that. Proof that I couldn't take care of my own child.
Let me get this straight. You mean you signed that confession just to keep this other matter quiet?
Yes. Why not? You told me yourself no jury would ever believe me. Well, this way, at least there are some things my boy will never have to know.
But that means you're not guilty.
X-ray,
and if you're not guilty, I won't stand for...
Just out, X-ray. Madeline Conlon confesses to murder.
Mark,
X-ray.
Listen.
Mannequin murderer confesses to killing Sutton. Read all about it.
Mark, you promised me that confession wouldn't be made public before the trial.
Yeah, that must be Tracy's work. He wasn't going to miss a bet on publicity for the department. Come on. They want a front page case. All right, they're going to get it.
You can't resign to defend me.
I have resigned, and I'm going to defend you.
But you mustn't, Mark. Oh, don't you suppose I know what this case means to you? Everything you've ever worked for. You'll be district attorney. Everyone says so. And that's your meaning, don't you see? Oh, not in dollars, but in achievement. It's that gold mine you were going to stumble on. You found it. You can't lose it now.
Madeline, even if I believed you were guilty, it'd be impossible. You see, I have found what I was looking for. But it has nothing to do with being D.A. I love you, Madeline. And all of this, as terrible as it is for you, has almost been a blessing for me. It's made me sure.
And you are sure, Mark? Terribly, terribly sure?
Yes, darling. Oh, Maddie, you mustn't cry.
Oh, my darling, if you only knew how I wanted to say.
Defendant Madeline Conlon, having availed herself of her legal right to change her plea, to stand before this court charged with murder and or manslaughter and or other charges specified in this indictment. We shall proceed. Counsel for the state.
Ready, Your Honor. Louis Tracy, district attorney of this county.
Counsel for the defense.
Mark Standish, Your Honor. Counselor at law.
And I protest, Your Honor. Mr. Standish, as a former prosecutor entrusted with the handling of this case, cannot legally serve now as counsel for the defendant. Section 162 of the state code states specifically that such action is a misdemeanor.
Well, Mr. Standish, Mr. Tracy is correct in his citation.
Your Honor, I'm aware of the section. But may I point out that the statute does not deny me the privilege of defending Miss Conlon if this court will permit such defense. And I stand ready to accept whatever penalty this court may deem proper, if in pursuing justice, I am guilty of a crime.
Very well. Under the circumstances, Mr. Standish, this court will permit you to stand as counsel.
Objection?
But overruled.
Exception.
Let it be so recorded. However, Mr. Standish, I have a further warning for you. In taking this action, not only will you be guilty of a misdemeanor, but you will automatically forfeit your license to practice law.
I know that, Your Honor.
Mark, no. You can't do it. I won't let you be disbarred.
Madeline, I know what I'm doing. It's all right. Your Honor, if the court please, the defense is ready.
And the state will prove that this woman did with malice aforethought willfully force her way into the home of Alan Sutton and murder him. We shall present the defendant's own confession. The
temerity. No. No, I didn't.
But you did force your way in. Answer. Answer, Miss Conlon.
I didn't say that. I didn't.
But you did say you'd kill him if he took your child away from you. You admitted that in your confession, didn't you, Miss Conlon?
No. No. I never meant that.
Answer, Miss Conlon, answer.
Oh, I only tried to make him see the boy was mine.
You opened your bag and took out a gun?
I didn't. I didn't, I tell you. I had no gun.
But yesterday you admitted the gun was yours.
I couldn't. I didn't. I said...
We know what you said, Miss Conlon.
No, no, I did tell you the truth.
You had even planned this out for weeks before, hadn't you?
Yes. No, no, I didn't plan it. Not killing him.
Ah, but you planned it just the same, didn't you?
No, I swear I didn't. Mom!
You killed Alan Sutton.
I didn't. No, 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 don't keep saying that.
You killed him.
No.
You killed him.
No.
You killed him.
No, no, leave me alone.
She killed him.
She killed him.
She killed him.
You're lying. You're all lying. Mark, John, listen, stop.
That's all. Your witness, Mr. Standish.
Miss Conlon, Madeline, you've got to pull yourself together.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Now, can you answer just one or two questions for me?
Yes. I'll try.
Miss Conlon, you have sworn that the gun which killed Alan Sutton was not yours, but his, and that he himself took it from his desk.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
And Was this that gun, Miss Conlon?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Your Honor, I object. What kind of charlatanism is this? Counsel for defense introducing new evidence on redirect examination. Pulling the old melodramatic trick of producing a gun that may have belonged to any.
Your Honor, it doesn't belong to just anybody. It belongs or did belong to Alan Sutton. And I enter it in evidence as Defense Exhibit A. It was not introduced previously in this trial because it was only found this morning. Found by a professional diver in the river where the defendant, in her panic, had thrown it. I also enter in evidence the affidavit of said diver and that of the clerk who sold this gun to Alan Sutton 2 days before his death.
As intelligent men and women are not going to be deceived by the hysterical melodramatics which Mr. Standish and Madeline Conlon have paraded before you in this courtroom. Remember this. Madeline Conlon did confess to the murder of Alan Sutton. And having confessed it, you have no other course.
And may I remind you that the prosecution bases its entire case on the supposition that Miss Conlon owned the gun which killed Alan Sutton. Defense has conclusively proved that she did not own that gun. Furthermore, that the nature of the fatal wound indicates that the gun was in the hand of the dead man when it was discharged. The prosecution has made no case, ladies and gentlemen. And they could make no case. Madeline Conlon is innocent. And I know that when you file into that jury room, your conscience will not break.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you agreed upon a verdict?
We have. We, the jury, find the defendant, Madeline Conlon, not guilty.
I'll answer it, Mummy. Please let me answer it.
All right, darling.
Hello? This is Mr. Standish's residence. Who wants to speak to him? It's for you, Daddy. It's Judge Fulton.
Oh, thanks, Sonny. Hello? Yes, Judge. You what? Well, that's a relief. I thought you were going to impose that suspended sentence you still got hanging over my head. I see. Oh, well, thank you. I'll talk it over with Mrs. Standish and call you up in the morning. Good night, Judge.
What you going to talk over with Mummy?
Oh, she wouldn't be interested.
Wouldn't I?
No, not a chance. Judge Fulton says he just got word the Supreme Court passed on a resolution of the State Bar Association today. A resolution to give back his license to practice to a fellow named Standish.
Mark.
And by a strange coincidence, the Reform Party bigwigs were also meeting. It seems they have an idea that this same Standish fellow would be a good candidate to run against Lou Tracy for district attorney. Well, what do you think, Mrs. Standish? Would you say we were interested?
Oh, darling. I'm so happy for you. Your gold mine. Mine, too. We found them, haven't we, darling?
And now Conrad Nagel is stepping out in front of the Silver Curtain with our stars, Constance Bennett and Melvin Douglas.
What is this, an interview?
Well, not exactly, Mel. It's just our usual informal get-together. Folks, meet Constance Bennett and Melvin Douglas. Connie and Mel, meet the folks.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I probably should have warned you that you're supposed to be a little more conversational than that.
Oh, we're supposed to say something?
That's right.
Okay, I'll make it short. I enjoyed being with you on the Silver Sea Theater, so thanks for the use of the hall, and I hope I can come back again sometime.
You most certainly can, Mel. I'll extend an invitation for next season right now. In the meantime, lots of luck.
Thanks, Conrad. The same to you. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Mel. Wait a minute. Before you go, Connie, I want to say thank you again for being with us tonight, especially tonight. You see, tomorrow begins Brides Week, and brides being rather glamorous people, well, we can't help feeling that we're particularly lucky to have a glamorous star like Connie Bennett at the inauguration ceremonies.
Thank you, Conrad. And I really enjoyed being here. And as far as luck goes, well, I think the girl who's really in luck is the bride who gets the lovely 1847 Rogers brother
silver plate that John Connie mentioned a few minutes ago. I saw one of those new bridal chests yesterday. And as we say in Hollywood, it's colossal.
Well, thank you, Connie. John Connie, will you take over? Ladies and gentlemen, you know why Constance Bennett is so enthusiastic when you see that gorgeous bridal chest yourself. For here is silver plate of such striking beauty of design and superior craftsmanship, you will love and cherish it as long as you live. So this coming week, Bride's Week, visit your silverware dealer and let him show you the many thrillingly lovely patterns it comes in. Look at First Love particularly, that sensational 1847 Rogers Brothers pattern whose high-raised, richly detailed motif brings sterling silver craftsmanship to finest silver plate. Also, Lovelace, graceful, pierced pattern of wedding ring orange blossom inspiration. And then agree, as you can't help but agree, that certainly here is the gift of gifts for 1939 brides. Silver plate by 1847 Rogers Brothers. Melvin Douglas' new Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture is Tell No Tales, and at the Columbia Studio, he has just completed Good Girls Go to Paris. Constance Bennett's latest picture is the United Artists' Hal Roach production, Topper Takes a Trip. Next Sunday at the same time, Silver Theater stars Joan Crawford in Train Ride, a stirring drama about a journey to fate. Be sure to listen. In the meantime, if you want solid silver, you want International Sterling. If you want silver plate, you want 1847 Rogers Brothers, both proudly created by International Silver Company. Love is Our Destiny was by Paul Franklin and was adapted for Silver Theater by True Boardman. Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Felix Mills. John Conte speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Silver Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 30th, 1939 on CBS, featuring movie actress Constance Bennett, who was best known for the motion picture series Topper, in which over the course of several films played the ghost of Marion Kirby, with Cary Grant as George Kirby, another ghost harassing Mr. Topper, played by Roland Young. When the series was adapted on radio, Young reprised his part and Hope Emerson took over Bennett's role. You are listening to An Hour of Romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of Dr. Christian, a broadcast called The Norton Knows, a CBS episode from September 17, 1947.
Dr. Christian, David.
The Vaseline Program, the only show in radio where the audience writes the script. And tonight's honors and prize money go to Hallie Truett Yenny of New York City for her delightful comedy, The Norton Knows. Jean Hirschhold is starred as Dr. Christian, with Rosemary DeCamp in the role of Judy Price. Folks, do you know somebody whose hair never seems to be able to lie down? Then do him a good turn. Tell him about Vaseline Hair Tonic. For just a few drops of Vaseline Hair Tonic every morning, keep a man's hair neat and well-groomed all day. Vaseline Hair Tonic cares for the scalp, too. Loosens dandruff, relieves that tight, itchy feeling, and other signs of dry scalp. Vaseline Hair Tonic is good for the scalp because it supplements natural oil. Good to use on the hair because it contains no alcohol or other drying ingredients. Yes, Vaseline Hair Tonic gives double care to scalp and hair. It's a double-purpose hair tonic. First choice with American men today. You've never used it? High time you remedied that. Get Vaseline Hair Tonic tonight and try it tomorrow. Vaseline Hair Tonic is one of the many Vaseline brand products made by the Cheesebro Manufacturing Company, owners of the trademark Vaseline. So now let's have a look at the Norton Knows. The opening scene takes place in a room in the River's End Hospital where young Pamela Norton lies swathed in bandages. Yesterday, she was hit by a truck driven by one Michael Clancy, and her nose, the famous Norton Knows, has been pretty thoroughly bashed.
Is it going to be very bad, Dr. Christian? My nose, I mean.
In fact, I might make a pretty good job of it myself, but I think I'm going to be able to swing something rather special for you.
Such as a platinum nose set with star sapphires?
No, I'll put in a call for a young doctor who has just been released from hospital duty by the government. There's not a better plastic man in the whole country. If I can get Dr. Mason, your nose should be about as it was.
Oh.
Well, I must be getting around to my really sick patients now, people with gallbladders and such. Not just a girl who has been hit by a truck.
May I come in?
If the nurse doesn't put you out, Judy, you may stay exactly 30 minutes.
All right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Dr. Kirsten. Well, you certainly sound natural, Pam, to be swathed in bandages the way you are. Do you hurt much?
Oh, some.
Oh, then I'll go right now.
No, Judy, wait. You've got to do something for me.
What?
Judy, don't let that Dr. Mason or any other doctor make my nose back the way it was. I hate it.
Why, Pam, I didn't know that.
Well, I do. And I'll let it stay just the way it is, a lot of broken mess before I'll have that horrible nose back again.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought it was aristocratic.
Oh, it was. It was aristocratic and it had character. And Augusta used to tell me that every day of my life. It inspired admiration and respect. But no work calls. A man would as soon think of dating me as of the Washington Monument.
Oh,
Judy, maybe you won't believe this, but I've never even been whistled at in all my life.
Well, all we have to do is to tell this Dr. Mason when...
No, he's never seen me. He doesn't have to know, and Dr. Christian says he's young.
Oh, okay. He'd probably do a better job that way, but you'll have to have something to go by. How shall we tell him you look?
Well, here, give me my handbag off the chair.
Mm-hmm.
Have a picture in it. Oh, thanks. Here it is. Isn't it an adorable nose?
Oh, Pam, with a nose like that, you'd be perfect. Leave it to me. I'll stand over that doctor with an axe if need be. And if it works, I may make a date with Mike Clancy's truck myself. Goodbye now. Dr. Christian's office. Oh, yes, just a minute. It's that long distance you were trying to put through yesterday, Doctor.
Thank you, Judy. Hello? Oh, Mason? Hello, Carl. Good to hear your voice. Been having a good rest? Good. I'm just about to ask you a favor. I want you to do an operation for me. No, I don't want my face retreaded, as you call it. It's a young girl I know. In fact, I brought her into the world about 22 years ago. Oh, no, she's just had an accident. It's pretty much wrecked her nose. Oh, sure, I could, but it'll sort of give you a warm-up before tackling that big New York practice. You will? That's great. You can stay at my place. Thank you, Carl. Goodbye. Well, Judy, that takes care of that. Now little Pamela can have her nose restored as it was.
Oh, Dr. Christian, I talked with Pam this morning, and she says she simply will not have that awful nose put back on her face.
See what?
That's what she said.
What's wrong with her nose?
Well, I never thought of much about it myself before, but now that I look back on it, I know Pam never did have much fun. And I think it was because she looked too intellectual.
Oh, so it's a black day for a girl when she looks intellectual?
I know it sounds crazy, Dr. Christian, and it's wonderful to be intellectual, but if you're a girl and you want to have dates and go to dances, it's pure poison to look that way. Do you know what Pam told me?
Oh, I shall be very interested to know.
She told me that she had never been whistled at in all her life. With all those soldiers camped right here at the edge of town, Pamela Norton was never whistled at.
Am I hearing you right, Judy? I've heard you say that you hated to pass the post office because there was always a gang of soldiers who whistled at you. I could swear I've seen you get furious.
Well,
because...
of course I was furious. What girl wouldn't be? Well, it's hard to explain, but you know how movie stars hate souvenir hunters. But if they didn't show up, the Clark Gables and the Jimmy Stewart would certainly be worried.
Oh, so what the autograph hunter is to Frank Sinatra? Mm-hmm. I begin to see. So Pam ascribes all this lack of wolf calls to her nose. Well, Miss Augusta thinks very highly of the Norton nose.
Oh, Miss Augusta. To her, that nose is an heirloom in the Norton family, second only to the Declaration of Independence.
Well, I think that describes its exact duty. It seems, according to her, that nose, or one just like it, has been blown off and on by one signer of the Declaration of Independence. one ambassador to the court of St. James, one judge of the Supreme Court, and one governor of the state of Vermont.
And Pamela is probably the first woman to inherit it since Miss Sarah Norton poured boiling maple syrup on the red coat.
Oh, well, here comes Miss Augusta herself.
Oh.
And heaven help you if she can read your mind.
Good morning, Miss Augusta. How are you this morning? Won't you sit down?
No, young lady, I will not sit down. Not with my niece in the hospital with her nose literally ground to bits. I insist upon seeing Dr. Christian at once.
You want to see me, Miss Norton?
I certainly do. You asked me to bring a photograph of Pamela showing her profile, so heaven knows why you should want it when you've known Pamela since she was born.
But you see, Miss Norton, I'm not going to operate.
You are not going to operate?
No, Miss Norton.
Then who is, pray?
One of the finest plastic surgeons in the whole country.
And who is this man whom you've engaged without consulting me?
Dr. Mason is a young doctor.
You can stop right there. I don't want him. What's the matter with you? You've forgotten all you learned in 30 years of practice?
No, Miss Norton. If it were one of the football boys, I'm sure I would be able to do a good job of plain surgery and bone setting on him. But for a girl, she should have a specialist in that type of work.
Specialist. One doctor to pull your teeth, another doctor to give you a pill, another doctor to set your bones, and still another to deliver your babies. Pamela's grandfather Norton used to amputate legs up to here, right on the kitchen table. I don't want any young squirt practicing on Pamela's nose.
Dr. Mason will not be practicing. He spent 2 years in the hospitals of Europe and 2 more years over here, and all that time he did nothing but rebuild faces that had been destroyed. Your niece is most fortunate to have him.
Well, I'm going to hold you personally responsible for Pamela's nose being restored exactly as it was.
Did you bring the pictures I asked for?
No, I looked everywhere for one, but...
Well, afraid in that case, I can hardly guarantee...
Oh, yes, you can. I did find this miniature of her great-uncle Abner Norton. It was made while he was serving as ambassador at the court of St. James. And he had the Norton nose. There. Do you see the resemblance?
That's strange. I've never noticed Pamela's nose particularly before. Hey, was it really like this, Miss Norton?
Exactly. That nose has been handed down in the Norton family for 200 years. Always through the father's side.
I see.
Well, I wish I did. Though, of course, it's simple enough when you stop to think of it. By some strange coincidence, none of the women who have inherited the Norton nose has ever chosen to wed.
And you want that nose restored?
I do. And you can tell that paragon of whatever his name is to hang that miniature on a nail right over the operating table and not to take his eyes off the whole time he's fixing Pamela's nose.
I'll tell him, Miss Norton. Mason is a great plastic surgeon.
Plastic fiddlestick.
Oh, Dr. Christian, you're not going to let him do it, are you?
And if I should prevent Dr. Mason from restoring the Norton nose, who's to protect me from Miss Augusta?
Well, Dr. Christian, you just leave the picture of Uncle Abner in your desk drawer. It's absolutely everything you have to go by, except this.
Bless my soul, Judy. Where'd you get this picture?
Pam gave it to me this morning. That nose would be the opening up of a whole new life for her.
Full of wolf calls and whistles, no doubt.
I hope so. She's awfully behind on them, you know.
Hey, I wish I knew what you were planning.
Oh, whatever it is, it'll be all right for me, but it might be unethical for you.
Good morning, Miss Judy. May I give you a lift to the office?
You certainly may. Oh, what a day.
Yes, it's pretty bad. Will Dr. Christian be in this morning?
No, not right away. He's on a case.
I just wanted to see him about this Augusta Norton. She landed in on me last evening, raving about the little girl I'm to operate on. Why, she's...
Don't say it. But she is all right.
As we used to say when I was a kid, that she has some of her buttons missing.
That's it.
Well, what about her demand that Pamela's nose is to be reconstructed to look like the one in a miniature Dr. Christian is supposed to have shown me?
Oh, dear. Well, then she was serious when she brought that picture in and told us to give it to you. Why, we thought it was a joke.
So you think the old girl's balmy?
Well, she must be. I think I have the miniature here in my bag. I want you to look at it. Does that look like it belonged to a lovely girl?
Yeah, my word. I shouldn't want to put that nose on her if I knew it belonged to her. I'll tell you, I'll make a thorough examination today and then get right to work.
All right. Shall I tell Dr. Christian?
Yes, if you don't mind. You know, Miss Judy, Pam's one of the nicest girls I've ever met.
I think everyone in River's End loves Pam.
I can believe it. You never hear her complain. You'd think she was happy over this whole thing.
I noticed that, too. You better take Uncle Abner along with you. But if you want something to go by, this isn't a picture of Pam, of course, but the nose certainly could be hers.
I see. Very pretty.
Yes.
Well, tell Dr. Christian I'll have a full report for him this evening.
I'll tell him. And thank you for the lift, Dr. Mason.
Not at all. And so, Dr. Christian, I think I can safely say that we can have her nose... About as it was.
You say as it was?
Yes, and it'll be a relief to me.
Why?
Why? Have you ever met her aunt?
Is it so important to have her aunt satisfied?
If it weren't for Pamela herself, I should like giving her a nose like Cyrano, just to hear that old harridan throw a full set of hysterics. Of course, it's not as bad as though the girl's nose has really been like that awful miniature.
No, of course not, but how do you know it wasn't?
Your nurse told me. She told me about the old lady being slightly off the beam and gave me a picture which she intimated was like the little Norton girl's nose.
Well, Carl, my advice is put that little picture Judy gave you right in front of you while you work.
Right. And it'll be a pleasure. Well, Pam, tomorrow's the great unveiling. Now, if your nose turned out to be somewhat different from what you'd expect it to be, you wouldn't be upset.
Oh, Dr. Mason, I want a nice nose. I don't want it to be like the one I've always had. I didn't want you to know this at first, but I hated my nose.
Really? You mean you hated that lovely little nose like Myrna Loy's?
Oh, Dr. Mason, I hate telling you this, but I didn't have a nose like Myrna Loy's.
I know it, Muggins.
You know... What did you call me?
Oh, I'm sorry. It slipped out. I called you Muggins. Are you angry?
Muggins. But I think it's wonderful. Muggins. But that's why I must tell you about my nose. If you had known me before all this, you'd never in all the world have called me anything but Pamela. Because I looked like Pamela.
But I know exactly what you looked like before all this happened. Your nose was badly broken, but the structure of it was quite evident.
Oh, then my nose will be exactly the way it was?
No, not exactly.
How do you mean, not exactly? Either it has a hump or it hasn't.
Well, yes and no.
Oh, you have done it. You've left that dreadful hump.
When you get your bandages off tomorrow, just run your finger along the ridge of your nose.
It'll feel like a toboggan run.
No, it won't. It'll be just barely off straight.
But why not straight?
Well, if I had been, say, 25 instead of a doddering 33, I should probably have made it just like the picture.
What has your age got to do with my nose?
A lot. I have more of a nose now than I would have at 25. You see, the nose you wanted was pretty but irresponsible. The one you had was stern and uncompromising. The one you're getting is gay but responsible.
And why did it have to be responsible?
Because as soon as I get rid of these bandages so I can kiss you, if you say yes, I'm going to ask you to be responsible for me. Out of the operating room, I'm a frightfully irresponsible guy.
Oh, now you're making fun of me.
Now, Muggins, you haven't known me long, but we've seen each other every day. I think I know you pretty well. Of course, you may not feel the same about me. You may want to know me longer. Oh, that's all right. I can wait. I just want to know that you know I'm waiting. To go?
Well, I'll have to think it over a long time. You see, you are proposing to me. Oh, aren't you?
Of course I am.
But that nose. Would my children inherit that awful nose or the one you've just made me? The one you say is gay but responsible.
Oh, that. Why worry about such things? They can select the noses they like.
And their father would make them the sort of noses he liked.
Which would indubitably be the sort of noses they should have.
Oh, dear, I feel simply wonderful. If I do decide to get married, which I'm not at all sure of now, I shall give my bridal bouquet to Mike Clancy to tie on his radiator as a token of my gratitude and esteem.
I thought we'd all get more fun out of this coming out party if we held it at Dr. Christian's office.
Fail to see what Dr. Christian had to do with all this.
Well, Aunt Augusta, I'm afraid to think of what my nose would have looked like if Dr. Christian hadn't called in Dr. Mason.
You don't know what it's going to look like now.
Oh, I'm sure, Miss Norton, that Pamela's nose would be...
Much you know about it, when you wouldn't even think of setting it yourself. I must admit, Dr. Christian, my opinion of you has fallen off in no small degree.
All right, here goes. First, I cut through this little... There, now. Now I'll unwind this and... Well, there you are. Hand to the mirror, Judy.
Well, I shall see my lawyer. I don't care if it keeps you working the rest of your life. You were factory billed and not
moved. But, Aunt Augusta, you sound as though my nose were a national monument. Besides, I like it this way.
Miss Norton, since you feel that your niece's nose should have perpetual care and that I am somewhat responsible for its present condition, I've decided that the least I can do would be to marry her. Well, in that way...
Pamela, you come with me this instant. I refuse to listen to any further insult.
Oh, Carl isn't really being insulting, Aunt Augusta. We are going to be married, but not because of my nose. I hope.
Doing this to keep you from suing, Pamela?
Why, Miss Augusta... He's made Pamela's nose exactly like yours. Well, don't you see, Judy? It's a work of art.
Well, now that you mention it...
Of course, it would have much more trouble, but I didn't mind it. It was so much better looking.
Well, of course. Is it really like mine? I never in all the world would have dreamed of having such a sacrilege perpetrated.
But people can be beautiful, Miss Augusta, and still have character. Come on, Muggins. Let's pick up the car and go for a drive. There's some unfinished business for us to talk over.
No. God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform.
How do you mean, Miss Augusta?
Oh, just little Pam. And my nose. To think that young man went to all that trouble. Well, I can't seem to be able to say what I mean, but I mean it. I must say, Dr. Christian, it's all you said he does. And I'm most grateful to you for recommending him. Most grateful. Well, I'll be running along. Bye, Dr. Christian.
Goodbye, Mrs.
Dr. Christian, you humbug. Telling her Pam's new nose looks just like her.
Oh, that was tact, Judy, just tact. I find I need a lot of it in the doctor business.
Comes down on another Dr. Christian prize play with our star, Jean Hersholt, waiting to greet you. But first, a message from Judy Price.
Friend, here's an interesting letter Dr. Christian and I received from a young mother. Recently, my 3-year-old daughter fell against a hot coal range. Her palms and fingertips of both hands were badly burned. I grabbed her up and dashed for my tube of Vaseline petroleum jelly. I covered both hands freely, then bandaged them. Her screams subsided, and she was soon ready to go to sleep. Next day, I applied fresh Vaseline petroleum jelly and bandages. By evening, she was playing as if nothing had happened, and the burns healed perfectly, thanks to Vaseline petroleum jelly. Signed, Mrs. Edward J. Creamer, Portland, Oregon.
Thank you, Rosemary DeCamp. And now here is Jean Hersholt.
Thank you very much. The author of tonight's prize play is Hallie Truett Yenny of New York City. She writes, It is very gratifying to me to be allowed to join Dr. Christian's new writers. For in spite of the fact that I am 68 years old, I am still a new writer. Mrs. Yenny comes from a writing family, has raised 8 children, and now has 16 grandchildren. And she adds, now at least they can say, well, anyway, my grandmother wrote a script for Dr. Christian. Well, welcome to our ranks, Mrs. Yenny, and our congratulations to you. Next week, we plan to present one of our special $500 winners, 20-year promise, by Evelyn Sibley Lampman of Portland, Oregon. We invite you all to join us again next Wednesday evening, same time and same station. Till then, I'll say good night.
That stays good looking all day. Use just a few drops of Vaseline Hair Tonic every morning. For Vaseline Hair Tonic checks dry scalp, tames hard to manage hair, keeps it looking neat and well groomed. Tomorrow morning, try Vaseline Hair Tonic. Gilmore speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Dr. Christian, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from September 17th, 1947, bringing to a close this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.